Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian, episode 13, Working Outside Your Environment. I'm Daniel Messer. Hello there, and welcome back to another episode of Cyberpunk Librarian, the show that explores the intersection between libraries and technology, and is all about living the life of high tech and low budget. My name is Daniel Messer, your friendly neighborhood cyberpunk librarian, and hey, thank you for tuning into the show. It is great to be back in front of a microphone again, talking to you, sharing with you, and at this point, apologizing to you for a late show. See, last week, when the show should have dropped, I had spent most of the weekend getting some of my parents' things out of a small town in Nevada called Wells. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to Nevada, but in case you haven't, let me break this down real quick. There is a stretch of highway that runs straight through the state of Nevada from north to south, and from south to north if you're going the other way, called US 93. Now, US 93 is some of the most desolate stretch of roadway you have ever driven. And it's one of those roadways where they kind of make horror movies about highways like US 93. So my parents had some stuff that was in Wells, Nevada. I had to go get it. I flew to Salt Lake City to grab a U-Haul there and drove from Salt Lake City to Wells. And then we stayed the night in Wells, loaded up the truck, and came home to Queen Creek, Arizona. That is a drive. Well, from Wells to Queen Creek, you're looking about at 11 and a half hours. Yeah. So by the time Monday rolled around, I was still recovering from that because I did it almost all in one stretch, just stopping for bathroom breaks and gas. So yeah, I was a little exhausted. You wouldn't have wanted to hear me talk anyway. Most of it probably wouldn't have been coherent as it was. So hey, I apologize for that, but here we are again with another show of Cyberpunk Librarian. And as always, if you wish to pick up some show notes or anything like that, anything that I talk about or that I share here that's worthy of linkage, there will be linkage, and you can pick up that linkage on cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. And that's where you'll find, you know, the archive of shows and all the other notes from shows past and any other thing you might want that's got something to do with this show. So speaking of this show, what are we going to talk about? Well, as you heard in the intro bit, we're going to talk about working outside your environment. And I mean that in a couple of ways, because as a cross-platform nerd, I believe it is very important to stretch your arms, stretch your legs, and figure out what it's like to work outside your environment, not just your technological environment, but your actual working environment. And sometimes I believe this can be very healthy as not only a mental exercise, but just as a physical thing. Sometimes you just get up and go somewhere else and see what you can do there. So we're going to be talking about that, and we're going to be sharing a little music as always. And, you know, music, not a bad idea.
We begin this evening's recital in a rhythmic cycle.
So when I talk about working outside your environment, I'm not just talking about the space that you inhabit or the things that you use or stuff like that. I'm talking about the technological sphere of your environment as well. Because quite frankly, in the modern library and in the modern workplace in general, technology is part of that environment. You really can't get away from it. Now, I don't know much about the library you work in or what your work environment is like if you don't work in a library. But I can make some assumptions, and I bet if this isn't you, then it's probably someone that you know, and you'll still be able to relate to this in some ways. So some assumptions that I can make is that you probably work in some kind of office setting. Maybe your own office, but maybe not. Maybe you work at a desk that is in Cubicleville, or you have a more open floor plan. But the thing that I am going to say is that if you're listening to this podcast and you work in a library, chances are you work in an environment that has people around you, people sitting at desks near you. You probably talk to them and work with them fairly closely. On that desk, I am almost positive, is a computer of some kind. And I'm going to reach out and take a guess here and say that that computer is running some flavor of Windows. Now, it's probably not the latest flavor. As a matter of fact, it's almost certainly not the latest flavor of Windows. Chances are you're running Windows 7, I would assume. Windows 7 seems to be the new XP. And by the new XP, I mean there are several computers still out there running the old XP. Now, I won't go off on a rant here, and I'm not going to take up a whole lot of time with this, but I do have to sort of get this off my chest. I know how IT environments work, and I know how IT departments love stability and known quantities, which Windows XP was for some 13 years. That is a long time for an operating system to be supported. No other operating system manufacturer or creator supports an operating system for that long. Apple upgrades their operating system at least once a year. Linux, depending on what you're using, can be upgraded every month. If you're using Canonical's Ubuntu Linux, you're looking at an upgrade at least once every 6 months. And I'm talking a fairly major upgrade with new bits and new things and improvements and all kinds of new stuff. If you're using something like Arch Linux, you can get new upgrades every day. That distribution is crazy for that, and it's kind of awesome, but a little bit scary. You want to talk about the bleeding edge? We'll talk about Arch. However, Microsoft supported Windows XP for some 13 years just because everybody was using it and demanded it. But I'm sorry, folks, after 13 years, it doesn't matter what it is, it starts to look dated and it starts to break down in terms of modern technology. And to all of the IT departments that are out there that are still using Windows XP because you still believe it to be a known quantity and stable, it is not. Microsoft no longer supports that operating system. So in some ways, yes, it is a known quantity to all of the people out there writing viruses and malware. Because they know that this version of XP is how it's always going to be from now on, because Microsoft isn't going to fix it. And any security hole that's there will pretty much always be there now. So if you're still using XP, or if your department is, see if you can talk them out of it. And if you're using it yourself, please stop. Switch to Windows 7 if you have to stick with Windows. Windows 7 is very much the new XP, and I see a long life of support for that too. But in the end, chances are you're seriously not running Windows 8 at work. Some of you might be. You are the outliers. I guarantee you, you are the outliers. So that's just a few assumptions that I can make. Now, that's just your technological environment. Your physical environment, like I said, may vary, but chances are you have a desk. It's around some other people who also have desks. You probably talk to those people as you work. You probably work very closely with those people to accomplish common goals, to get things done. And sometimes you just talk to them to talk to them. I mean, these people could be your friends, let alone your coworkers. Now, this is actually a fairly new thing. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to a great series called The Secret Life of the Office, which was sort of a sequel to The Secret Life of Machines. It's a, I think it was done on the BBC. I'm going to say it was. I might be wrong. But it was it's a British program done by an engineer named Tim Hunkin and a friend of his, Rex Gerard. Now, these guys are highly entertaining, and they've got a deadpan humor to what they're doing as they explain not only how machines work, but The Secret Life of the Office is an exploration into how offices came to be, not just the technology, but also the culture. And there's a very good bit in one of these episodes, which, like I said, I will link in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast, where you can see what it used to be like. It was insane. These offices would hire efficiency experts to look at a worker's everything from how they typed to how they filed papers to where they stacked papers on their desk, and then they would suggest improvements to get just that little bit more out of that worker. It used to be that there were no cubicles, but you'll find that the cubicles are an improvement because what they had was warehouse-sized rooms with desks just lined up in rows and columns, much like a classroom. You went to your desk, you worked at your desk, you didn't talk to the person sitting next to you because that was a waste of company time. Yeah, it's gotten better. And you should really check this thing out when you get a chance. It's a great video. It's a very entertaining series. You'll find it on YouTube, but you can also just download the entire thing off the internet. I'll provide both links. Tim Hunkin is just, he's a wonderful person. I would love to meet this man. But anyway, so we're talking about technological and physical environment. And I'm going to start with the technological side of things, just as a place to start. But in my mind, as someone who's worked in libraries for 17 to 18 years now, wow, the technological and the physical side of your work environment are inseparable. If you come to work and your desk is not there, you can't do your job very well. If you come to work and your desk is there, but your computer has mysteriously vanished, you probably still can't do your job very well. They are interconnected bits of your working life. So let's start with the tech side, and I'm just going to talk about what I've done at my job personally that you might be able to do with yours. Now, at the very least, you might need to get some special permissions from IT, or you might just be able to work around things. Me, as a person who works in IT, I was able to work around things in a couple ways, and the way I started working outside of my technological work environment is I decided to see if I could do my job effectively using other computers and other operating systems. Now, as a web guy, I can pretty much do my job anywhere in the world as long as I have an internet connection of some kind. I have VPN or virtual private network access to my library systems, and from that, I can get into the library systems and do my job. It's great. So if the website goes down while I'm at home, as long as I can get to my desktop computer at work from my laptop here at home, I can usually get it back. I can usually bring it back without ever leaving the house. And likewise, if I need to put new content on the website, I can do it here. I can do it at a coffee shop. I can do it at a coffee shop in Calcutta as long as I have that internet connection. So the technological side of that is I don't really use Windows at home that much. I do have a Windows machine, and I do use it occasionally, but my two preferred sort of operating systems outside of Firefox are OS X and Ubuntu. I use both of them quite often. And not really Ubuntu per se, I use Kubuntu. I will install the Ubuntu distribution, and then I always go get the KDE desktop for it because, let's face it, I like pretty, and KDE is pretty. It's also very functional, and I like that too. But I install the Ubuntu Unity desktop because, hey, that's important. That's something that Canonical is actively working on. It's something that lots of people use, so I want to know about it. I want to know what's going on in Unity as well. So I use Unity, but most of the time, KDE is my go-to for Linux. But the fact is, not very much Windows. I like Windows. It's okay. I just don't prefer it. It's kind of like if you present me with, you know, three choices of food. Do you want fish and chips? Do you want steak? Or do you want filet mignon? Well, I like all of those. But steak and filet mignon are better than fish and chips. So, yeah, there's where I am technologically. So I started wondering to myself, I use my MacBook Air almost exclusively at home and abroad because it's a MacBook Air. It weighs about as much as a iPad 3 or an iPad 2 or something like that. It's not very heavy. I can throw it in a little bag that I carry, and I don't really even know that it's there, but I've got a fully functioning computer with me. It's great. So I started to wonder, can I maybe use that at work? I know it's not a Mac environment. As a matter of fact, it's a very heavy Windows environment. Everything runs on Windows. All of our servers are Windows server. So, yeah, could I do it? I mean, that's the first question I had to answer. Could it even be done? Well, At work, I'm lucky enough to have a very big monitor. I'm not exactly sure how big it is. It's probably at least 24 to 28 inches. Very nice monitor, and it fits within my philosophy. I don't do the dual monitor or triple monitor thing very well. I don't need multiple monitors. I just need one monitor, and it needs to be as big as possible. My monitor here at home that I'm literally looking at as I record this, that's hooked to my Mac Mini, is a 32-inch HD TV, and the Mac is plugged into it via an HDMI plug. It is gorgeous. I love my big monitor. I picked up this HD TV for something like $80 or something at a garage sale, and I brought it home. It doesn't even have a base. I don't care. In true cyberpunk librarian fashion, I have it leaned against the wall, and it is supported with two bookends. It's not going anywhere. I've tried. So, at work I have very much a similar setup, but it's not quite as big. But the great thing about this monitor is it has multiple plugs. So, my desktop computer is plugged in via your standard VGA plug, but it's also got an HDMI port. So, I thought to myself, I could plug the Mac Mini into the HDMI port. Or not the Mac Mini, my apologies, the MacBook Air, into the HDMI port. And that way I've got my big monitor. And, you know, I can go back and forth. I just have to switch the input setting on the monitor itself. No problem. Now, of course, sooner or later, I do need to get to a Windows server or a Windows desktop to do something, fix something, tweak something, put new content, whatever. So I looked around, and I found this ages ago, so I already had it on my thing. But I had this problem before where I needed to get into a Windows desktop from my Mac. And lo and behold, Microsoft's remote desktop app is available for Mac, and it's totally free. You go get it from the App Store. If you need to remote desktop, or sometimes referred to as RDP, into a Windows box, and you have a Mac, go get that. It's Microsoft supported. It's Microsoft standard. It works brilliantly. So for all of my content creation here for the last week and a half or so, I've been using my Mac. I haven't been using Photoshop. I've been using Pixelmator, which is a Photoshop replacement for Mac. It is also about $15 and does, I would say, everything that I need Photoshop to do. Every time I use Photoshop, even as a guy that does graphics and graphic design and online graphics, I always feel I'm getting about $80 out of a $600 program, because I know that Photoshop does so much more than what I use it for, yet I don't need it to do any of those things. I just need to make some web graphics. So Pixelmator steps in, and for $15, you can't beat the price, and for $15, it's mine. I don't need a subscription service. And I've just fallen in love with it. I've had to figure out a couple things, like where certain things are or how to do X and Y. But a quick Google search, and I know how to do X and Y. It's fabulous. If you have a Mac of some variety and you haven't tried Pixelmator and you need a graphic, you know, a graphics editing system, you should go check it out. It's $15. It's great. I'll do a link to that in the show notes as well. So yes, I sat down at my desk. I already had a mini display port to HDMI adapter for my MacBook Air. So I plugged everything in. I even hooked up an external keyboard, and I've got a Bluetooth mouse. So yeah, I just closed the lid on the MacBook, and it came up brilliantly on my big monitor, and I went to work. Whenever I needed to access a Windows server or my Windows desktop, I would through RDP. And it got to the point that I didn't even log out of my desktop on my computer. I would just close that out, because if you close out an RDP window, all of your stuff is still there. It's just like you walked away from the computer. So when I log back in, everything comes up as I'd left it, and I just make a note to myself to log out of it at the end of the day. And I find that most of the time I was able to do probably 60 to 70% of my job on the MacBook Air alone, with occasional forays over to my desktop computer for whatever I need, because the desktop computer has connections that my MacBook Air doesn't. I could probably get those connections set up, but meh, that's fine. I've still got my gateway into the system, and it's very easy to get to. So that worked out really well. Now, occasionally, I would need to transfer something between the MacBook Air and my Windows desktop at work. And for that, I use Google Drive. For the most part, that works just fine because I have Google Drive installed on my MacBook Air. I have the same thing installed on my desktop at work. The accounts are linked. So say I made a web graphic on my Air, I would just simply make sure it looks good. I would save it to Google Drive. And by the time I RDP'd into my desktop computer, it's already there. It's already there and ready to go. So I just do whatever I need to do from there. For all of my sort of text editing needs and for basic HTML and web coding, I use Text Wrangler for the for OS X. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. I believe Text Wrangler is free. I'm pretty sure it was free. And it's just a brilliant, easy to use text editor. It has some code highlighting and stuff like that. But most of the time, I just need simple text. I don't need anything big and beautiful. I'm not doing a whole lot of PHP or C# coding. So while there are other solutions out there like Sublime Text for the person who's really doing a whole lot of, you know, professional grade coding, that's available for you. Sublime Text is wonderful. It's just more than I need. Same thing with Photoshop. I would get Sublime Text if I were doing something that was more involved, but my job is web content. While I do occasional coding and I do occasional development, I'm basically there to generate and post content. So, not, you know, to quote Austin Powers, it's not my bag, baby. So, okay, I'm sitting there at my desk with my Mac and finding out that I can do not only do my job, but do it well, to the point that I've basically switched to my MacBook Air for my job. Because, let's face it, I prefer it. I don't know about you out there, but if you have multiple computers at home and you have got at all a network set up between them, you have to give your computers a name. If nothing else, you have to give them a name on the network. Now, you can give them boring names like John's Mac, Jill's Windows Laptop, Steve's Windows Desktop. Yeah, that will work, but I find it far more interesting and fun to give them real names. My MacBook is Angelique, and yes, as a tribute to total nerddom, I named Angelique after Angelique Pettyjohn, who you may remember from a given episode of Star Trek that I will I'll post a link to that in the show notes as well, so you can find out who she is. If you've ever watched the classic Star Trek, you'll know who Angelique Pettyjohn is. She was in a fairly popular episode, fairly well-known episode. And as a detriment to my nerd cred, which I just boosted, I'm going to lose some because for the life of me right now, I totally can't remember the name of that episode. I am sorry. But like I said, check the show notes. We'll have an image there and you won't be able to miss her. So my MacBook is Angelique, and I like working with Angelique at work, and it's just sort of comforting to go to work and just take my beautiful laptop out of my bag, set it on my desk, get it all hooked up, and now I'm working. And then when I'm done, I unhook everything, put my laptop back in my bag, go home, put it on my desk at home, and now I'm playing. It's wonderful. I really enjoy that. Now, there are some people out there who might think that what I'm doing is absolute sacrilege. Why would you ever use your laptop for work? And hey, that is not an untoward attitude to have. There's nothing wrong with that philosophy. The reason I like using my laptop for work goes back to that sort of old IT philosophy. I like known quantities, and I like stability. And my MacBook Air is a highly known quantity because it's mine, and it's pretty dang stable too because it's still supported. So, if you have the opportunity at all to work outside your technological environment, just do it to see what it's like. You might find that it works just as well, if not better, and especially if you get to work with the things that you enjoy working with. Like I said, I have no problem with Windows. I use it every day, but I prefer OS X. And if I can do OS X to do my job, wow, that makes me not only a more productive worker, it makes me a happier worker, actually. So I've used OS X a couple weeks before that, I used Linux. I did the same things with a Linux laptop. It's actually the laptop that was issued to me by my job, but I've dual booted it with Windows 7 and Linux. And I did the same thing, and it worked fine because there are RDP programs for Linux as well. I'll link one in the show notes. I believe it's called, I always get this name wrong, it's like Remina or something like that. I believe that's right. I'll look it up and get the right name in the show notes. But it's an RDP solution for Linux, works in KDE, works in GNOME, and it'll do VNC, virtual network computing, which is just another desktop sharing setup along with RDP and all of that. Works great, and I found that I could do my job just as well with that too. So I prefer OS X over Linux by just a small margin. One of these days, I'm going to stop being so lazy, and I will install Linux on my MacBook Air. I just haven't done it yet. I haven't really had a need for that because I do have a Linux computer here if I really need to go to Linux. So that is your technological environment. Now, let's move on and talk about your physical environment, because the physical environment is something that most people think they can't get away from. And maybe you can't, but I am going to encourage you to try, especially if you have a technological focus to your job or to your work in any way, shape, and form. It may not be library work. I know some non-librarians listen to this podcast, and hello out there to all of you. Thank you for tuning in. But if you work in a environment that maybe you can leave on occasion, you should. You really should. There are times at work that one of the best things I can do for my job and to do for my productivity is get away from work, because sometimes there are distractions there. Sometimes there are things going on that I don't care to deal with right now. Sometimes I just need to do project A, B, and C and accomplish goals X, Y, and Z, but I can't do them there. There's too much happening. There's too much noise. They might be drilling holes in the walls to hang pictures or something like that. And this goes back to being lucky enough that I can do my job pretty much anywhere in the world using an internet connection. And what I will do is sort of email the team, my boss, whoever needs to know, and say, hey, I need to get out of here for a few minutes because of reason, insert reason here. I'm going down to location, which could be a coffee shop. It could be the lounge that's actually in the basement of the building that I work in. It's just someplace else. And I will tell them, you know, here's my phone number in case you don't remember it the last 60 or 70 times I've given it to you. Of course, I'm checking email. I'm still on the clock. I'm still doing my job. I'm still working. I just need to go someplace else. And for the most part, I am lucky enough that the people I work with have no problem with that. And there are times, because I live in Queen Creek, which is in the far southeast Maricopa County area, but work in Phoenix, which is 40 miles away in more central Maricopa County area, that I might need to go to work for only a couple hours that day, given my scheduling and shift. And it doesn't make much sense to drive 40 minutes to an hour to work 2 hours, then drive 40 minutes to an hour home. So I will either go to a branch library, which I have one very close. There is a Maricopa County branch library here in Queen Creek. Or I will just go to, like I said, a coffee shop. I cannot work from home. Now, I don't know about you. Everybody talks about the wonderfulness and the paradise that that would be to work from home. I can't do it. I can't work from home for the very simple reason that all of my stuff is here and I will get distracted. I know I will get distracted because I sit here at my desk. I can use my MacBook Air, just like I said, to access my job at work. but sitting over here is a TV. Maybe I could put some Netflix on that and watch a show or something while I work. No, I shouldn't do that. That's not something I can do at work. That's not something I should do here. Wow, I'm thirsty and it's 3 p.m. Maybe I could go down to the fridge and get a shock top. No, I can't have beer at work. I can't have beer at home when I'm working either. Well, maybe, you know, you could take a 15-minute break and go play a video game. No, I can't. Tell you what, I've got to get out of here. So I'll go someplace else. I'll either go to the branch library or I'll go to a coffee shop or whatever, and I can plug in my headphones and listen to some music or some podcasts while I get my job done. I just can't work at home because all of my stuff is here and I will start playing with my toys, as it were. So I will get out of here and I will go someplace else. And that change in physical environment and physical space is so mentally refreshing. Just the fact that I'm not looking at the same set of walls. I'm not looking out the same window at the same view across the street. I'm not occupying the same space, working at the same desk, sitting in the same chair. It's different. And because of that difference, it's sort of cleansing, at least to my mind, where I can look around, I'm in unfamiliar settings, or at least less familiar settings, and I can come up with all kinds of new stuff. I come up with ideas, I come up with better graphics, I think. Say I have to put a new web graphic on the site. Yeah, I can make it at work, but I've found that I've made some really superior web graphics when I'm not actually at my desk because, hey, new place. And if I'm at a coffee shop, I look around and, hey, look at the art on the walls. There's an idea. I could do something like that. I just have to make it. So I find that this helps immensely, and it can help you too, even if you don't have sort of the IT desk job where you can just get up and go someplace else. Maybe you're just a librarian who works at the branch and you have a desk and you can't really leave, but you do have break times and you do have lunch hours. And I'm not suggesting you work on your lunch hour. What I am suggesting you do is you carry a small notebook. It can be one of those hyper expensive Moleskine things. It can be a spiral notebook that costs 76 cents at Walmart. I don't care. Carry a notebook with you when you leave your desk for places elsewhere. Say it's lunchtime. Say it's just a break where you're going down to the coffee shop and you're going to get a coffee and you're going to take your sweet time coming back. I know you don't want to admit that you do that, but we all do that. We can stretch a 5-minute coffee break into a 15-minute coffee break, and we can do it very well. But take that little notebook with you. It doesn't have to be the whole 8.5 by 11 notebook size notebook. It can just be a small notebook. And I think you'll find, if you try, you'll have these thoughts about things that are applicable to your job. It could be a creative endeavor. It could be a better way to do something. And then just quick jot it down. Because if you think you're going to remember it, I can honestly tell you, you are wrong. I have had that thought many times where I'm walking down the street to this wonderful coffee shop that's just about a block and a half away from where I work. And it dawns on me, hey, this would be a cool thing to do with the website. And by the time I get back, I have no idea what it was. I just know I came up with this really cool thing to do with the website, and I really wish I'd written it down. Maybe it'll come back to me, but sometimes it doesn't. That change of environment, that change of workspace, is so mentally refreshing. It's almost like a flush where you just get someplace, you can look around and say, hey, I don't know any of these people. None of these people expect anything from me right now other than just to be a good customer of this coffee shop or just to be a good person in this staff lounge. And that's it. I can just sit here and do my job as best I know how without an expectation hovering over me directly. Of course, you still have expectations hovering over you, but maybe you can leave them at your desk and you know they're still there and you know you have to meet those expectations. But now you can kind of do it your way. You can sort of be whole Frank Sinatra-ish about the whole thing and you can do it my way. So give that a shot, even if it's just for 15 minutes, maybe half an hour or an hour lunch break. I don't know about you, but I think all of us kind of do a little work off the clock because we're all thinking about our jobs. Most librarians are very much into libraries as a thing. And I don't know about you, but I just can't switch that off. I'll be sitting watching a Netflix show of some kind, and something just pops into my head that would be a cool library project or a cool library thing. Yeah, it just happens. So I write it down. Maybe not in that notebook. I might not have it with me, but I'll just jot it down on a sheet of paper or something and go back to watching my thing. I can deal with it later. But the change in environment helps both ways. And if you're in a situation like I am, where I am fairly lucky enough to be able to take my environment with me, I can go to that coffee shop, I can take Angelique, I can sit down and start doing my job. Wow. Productivity levels go straight through the roof. I don't know how most jobs and how government agencies and how occupations feel about telecommuting. I haven't done any research on it. But I really suggest that if you're going to telecommute, don't do it from your house. You know your house. Everything around your house is even more familiar to you than your job, because you'll go to your job. And, you know, to kind of quote George Carlin, screw the company, the first 15 minutes are yours, and you'll look at a painting and you'll notice things in the painting that you didn't notice were there before. You've been there 10 years and you never noticed that thing in the painting. It's even worse at home, because you know that painting on your wall. You've looked at that painting for years, and you bought that painting. That painting is yours. Everything at your house is even more familiar than it is at your job. So if you're going to telecommute, go elsewhere if possible, because, like I said, it's that change. And that mental change in your physical environment is absolutely amazing for your productivity, and I think it's going to do wonders for your at-work happiness.
In a rhythmic cycle.
So that about wraps up this episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I hope you picked up some ideas and maybe some tips on how to get outside your environment and outside your head. I think you'll find both the idea of getting outside of your technological workspace and your physical workspace to be very cleansing, for lack of a better word. I mean, you probably can do your job anywhere. You just need to go to that anywhere that is not your office. Because let's face it, the office is nice, the office is there for you, but you don't always have to be there for the office. You can probably have just as good of ideas or even better ideas elsewhere. And, you know, if you're enjoying a cup of coffee while you're doing it, all's the better. So the music you're listening to right now is Evening's Recital by Gilo. You can pick that up at the Free Music Archive, which is a wonderful site for any tunes you might need for any kind of project, from film to podcasting to recording. Or hey, here's an idea. You just go to the Free Music Archive and listen to stuff. They've got some great stuff, from jazz to classical to downtempo, electronica, international, so much more, so many songs. Just go there, find a song, press play. I guarantee you're going to find something you like, kind of like Evening's Recital. I love this track. I've been listening to it for a couple, 3 days now, along with the rest of the tracks off of this album. So link to that in the show notes, along with the opening track, which, as always, is Belly Dance at Ebisu by Ryo Miyashita. Check out the Free Music Archive at freemusicarchive.org. I guarantee you're going to find something you like. And you know what? I think you'll enjoy the discovery, too. Artists you've probably never heard of doing some things that just won't appear on the radio because, hey, I like radio, but it's a little too predictable. Sometimes you need a little unpredictability in your life. Like I said before, if you want to pick up the show notes, you'll find those at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. You can leave a note in the comments or whatever you would like to do. Maybe suggest some ideas for working outside of your environment, both technologically and physically. If you want to get in touch with me directly, there are multiple ways to do so in this online connected world that we live in. You can drop me an email at cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. I check that frequently. I check it often. If you want to comment on the show or suggest an idea for another show, by all means, do it. I would love to hear from you. You can also hit me up on Twitter. I am at Bibrarian. That's B-I-B-R-A-R-I-A-N. It is like librarian. I'm sorry. It's like librarian, but with a B. You can also hit me up on Google+, which is my social network of choice. And I am google.com/+DanielMesser. Links in the show notes for all of that. But hey, if you're just listening and want to pick it up on your phone or whatever, go right ahead and do so. But don't do it in the car. That stuff's dangerous. So hey, closing out another episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I will be back in 2 weeks with yet another episode because I just can't stop and no one has put a gun to my head and told me to do so yet. So I'll see you next time here on Cyberpunk Librarian. Just remind you that you don't have to be high tech to be low budget, but it certainly helps when you're a cyberpunk. Take care.